Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant! Bale getting around and scoring for Tottenham!
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run! He scored! And he's away, Aaron Lennon! Crouch! Yes!
Welcome back to another edition of the internet's newest, most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. Half of that's probably not true. I am Skipjack, your host, Greg. I am joined by my faithful sidekick, Ben Daniels, live from Atlanta. How's it going, Ben?
Good. I'm enjoying a Corona Light with, instead of a lime, I'm having a dash of Skipjack tears.
There you go. Are you gracefully depositing those bottles in the recycling bin tonight?
Always.
I'm sure your fiance will be happy to hear that. And also with us, to help us make sense of a senseless world, we have our stat expert extraordinaire, Michael Cayley. Michael, say hello to the people.
How's it going, y'all? Just want to say I am currently drinking a Gruner Veltliner.
I hate both of you so much.
At the store as Vienna's party wine. So I'm drinking some Vienna party wine.
That makes as much sense as there being a Holy Roman Emperor who is neither Holy Roman or an emperor. So, after we've done a depressing introduction of drinks, and I hate that both of you coordinated that, let's talk about something even more depressing, which is the game against West Brom. Remember a week ago we were talking about how we'll beat the shit out of West Brom and how it'll be a good match to sort of get our feet under us before Arsenal? Not so much. That game fucking blew. Ben, why don't you start us out about how much that game sucked?
Pass.
Michael, what'd you think?
Well, I mean, I feel that if I'd been here last week, I would have definitely said something depressing. West Brom have, for the last 2 years, my stats have really liked them. Basically, defensively, they allow really, really few good chances. I think last year they were fourth or fifth in fewest danger zone shots conceded. This year, I think they're fourth in fewest danger zone shots conceded. They defend. They're boring as crap, and they defend. And we played really poorly against a team where you can't get away with that.
No, this felt like AVB ball. It really did. It was boring. We didn't know how to break them down. I don't necessarily know if it's as bad as AVB in the fact that we couldn't break them down, but we looked really awful. And there's really not a whole lot of excuses. I think it's telling. There on the Football Weekly, there were some journalists talking about how Pochettino was throwing water bottles on the sidelines, yelling at them to wake up. I mean, I think it's not a surprise that he was losing his mind so much. This was a really bad performance, and even if West Brom was frustrating us, we shouldn't have been that bad. It was awful. We couldn't break them down. It was boring. And they looked like the more dangerous team at the end. And they scored on a bullshit set piece, which, you know, I think we're all familiar with these days.
Well, I mean, it wasn't a bullshit set piece. What was bullshit about it was that
defending on it was bullshit.
Decided to, well, even before that, Kirikash was playing games at the back all day long. You know, there were times when, like, a ball was rolling out for a goal kick, and instead he stops it on the goal line and fucks around with the ball and then loses possession, or in this instance, played it out needlessly for a corner kick. It was just incredibly frustrating that we seemed to be not only completely listless and bereft of ideas and attack, but actively abetting West Brom and giving them chances to punish us.
Well, it's not like we have a super suspect set piece defense problem. You know, so it's not like we have to worry about giving up goals on set pieces, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're historically one of the best set piece teams in England.
Kevin, our editor Kevin on the site, has a great saying that he likes to break out whenever this stuff like this happens, which is we could get coached by Tony Pulis and still fuck up set pieces. It's just in our DNA. And I think he might be right. I'm so sick of watching this happen. It's so annoying. You know, it's what screwed us against Sunderland, rather. Sorry, I get my strike teams confused. It's what screwed us against Sunderland. It screwed us. It's so aggravating to watch. This game sucked. What do we think Michael, about how listless we look. Because it wasn't even... I mean, they just looked flat. They looked dead. We rotated 10 men from our Europa League squad. There's no excuse for tiredness, except for maybe Dembele, who apparently just had a kid, like, the night before. So I'll give him a pass if he was gassed. But, I mean, why did we look so flat? It could have just been West Brom, right?
No. And, I mean, it's... I mean, because the numbers are just, like, awful all down. I think we had 7 shots. I think we had, like, 2 from the danger zone. The less than 1 expected goal. You know, being shut out was a perfectly fair result, given how poorly we played.
Did we have a quality chance? Like, something you would...
Our best chance was that... was our only shot on target was that Soldado... He was kind of facing away from goal and kind of side-footed it near post. That was the only thing we put on target all game.
Yeah. We had one good move that ended in I think, a Christian Eriksen blocked shot from sort of just inside the 18-yard box. But both of those are half chances at best.
Ugh. But go, Mike. I'm sorry, Michael. I interrupted you.
And so, I mean, we were just slow. We were just terribly slow, and no one was making the right runs. No one was getting into positions, and occasionally when someone did make a run, they weren't picked out. It was I think I was sharing this with Ben earlier that we played – if you look at the pass counts, in our own defensive half, we played 230 passes, which is about 3 times the number of passes West Brom played. But both Spurs and West Brom played 130 to 140 passes in their attacking third. So we had all of the ball and did nothing with it. And then when West Brom got the ball, they were moving. They were getting into position. I mean, Berahino and Sessegnon were both getting into good positions and making good runs. And they were more dynamic than we were. And they're boring.
That's really frustrating because I think we all complained about how no one on this team knew how to move. No one in the front of this team knew how to move around and in the attacking zones under AVB. They just stood there like idiots. And... one thing you can say about Pochettino through the good games and the bad games is at least they're moving. I mean, at least we fixed that. And in this game, we just, you know, it's like someone like hit a reset button in all our players' heads. I mean, ugh.
Well, one of the things that has been good about our play under Pochettino is that Chadli and Adebayor have been getting into decent scoring positions, particularly Chadli, who I have problems with. And I think when he's not doing that, he can be totally a passenger. But in this game, neither of them were getting in the box. Nobody was getting in a position. And we had Dembele, Eriksen, and Lamela kind of just passing in weird little triangles in the middle of the field, even on the few occasions we had the ball, you know, in their half. But we had nobody willing to make that run. And part of the problem, I think, is that, you know, that Eriksen-Lamela dynamic is still sorting itself out. I mean, Dembele is never going to be the guy who's going to break forward, you know, past the striker and make a late run or an early run into the box and give an extra outlet there. And so we have right now Eriksen-Lamela both trying to be the setup man, facilitating things, and neither of them really seem to understand when it's their turn to be the final option, to be the guy who gets on the end of a move. Want to like pass it back to each other outside the 18-yard box. And so if they can't figure that out and Chadli and Adebayor aren't going to get in the box, then our attack is nothing. I mean, we have no options other than speculative shots from distance into a packed West Brom box.
It looked to me like, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I was watching this game on a bad stream through blood-red, raging eyes, that... late in the game, it seemed like Lamela was the only one who was like, F it, I'm just taking this over, and it didn't work, because it seemed like he was operating on in his own little world. He seemed to be the only one who was like, screw it, I'm at least going to try some stuff, and it just didn't work at all, because he just seemed so off everyone else's wavelength.
Well, late in the game, I think we had a lot of good things sort of happening. I mean, we had that midfield of Paulinho and Eriksen, which was terrifying, but... at the end of the game, we had Soldado, Paulinho, and Lennon on. And Lennon was doing a lot of work, getting down to the byline, putting in crosses, making a nuisance of himself. Soldado was getting in better positions than Adebayor. Paulinho was getting into decent positions in the box. And then with Lennon taking over some of that creative responsibility, we saw LaMelo finally able to put himself in positions where he could affect the attack directly rather than, you know, that sort of indirect playmaker type role. And it was encouraging, but it was also a little worrying that, you know, this is what it takes to get our attack firing. You know, no defensive midfielders, no structure.
Well,
just throw everything forward.
We've seen Pochettino sort of try that a few times this year, and it hasn't. I mean, it's kind of worrying. This is the most successful we have. It's like, let's throw on Lennon and let him run it, dudes, and stretch the play. And like, we sort of tried that. That's what we were trying to do with Townsend against Liverpool before, you know, he gave it away to Moreno on his first touch. But it's. We've seen, I don't know. I mean, we're still an attack. I mean, it's still a system in development, but you know, it's not firing on all cylinders. It should be firing better than it did against a team like West Brom. And with the way that, you know, now some of the hashtag brigade is out talking about, you know, oh, well, Southampton look great right now. Why don't we look better? What do we think, Michael, what do you think a performance like this means for Spurs in the sort of grand scheme of things? Can we take a lot away from it in terms of how Pochettino's sort of transforming the squad?
I think that, you know, we haven't, I think that taking one bad game and extrapolating a ton from, I think that, you know, good and bad games happen in a season. You know, City and Chelsea and Liverpool last year all had games where they looked like crap. And not that we're that good, but, you know, we're going to have even more. Because we're not that good. On the other hand, I think we were talking about this earlier, that this is now four games that Spurs have failed to get a result in, all of which we were differently bad, or against Sunderland we were good but failed to get a result. And at some point you have to start worrying, you know, is there a pattern here that I'm not quite seeing that's causing us to have these struggles?
Let's pause for a sec. Let's just look at league games because – you know, cup matches, who knows? Like, I, the lineups are different. You're traveling to weird places. Like, you could easily blame that Ukraine game on the pitch. Like, I mean,
Ukraine?
Sorry. Serbia, sorry. I apologize. Now, Ben won't be the only one attacked by Serbian ultras next week. You can blame that maybe on the pitch. So let's just look at the league games. You can throw West Ham out because we're down to 10 men. It's the first game of the year, so whatever. Let's just throw that game out. And we got
and we won, too.
We won, but let's throw it out. So then the games you have are Liverpool, where we just got – I would argue we had our fair share of bad luck in that match, but we got outplayed. You have QPR, where we were excellent. You couldn't have asked for a better performance. You have West Brom, which was complete garbage. And then you have Sunderland, which I would argue we were firing on all cylinders on attack. We should have scored two or three more goals. And we should have had one or two penalties in that game. The problem, of course, was our defending was not great. I'm willing to at least roughly throw the Sunderland game in the same category as QPR as far as a success, if not as comprehensive a success. But I don't know. You're right. The other two games, you want to look at Liverpool. That's a weird loss. And then you look at West Brom, which was an awful loss. And it's just, I don't know.
I mean, I think the point is, though, is that we're right now on a run of four results without a win. And, you know, the natural thing to do is say, what's the big picture here? Why is it all going wrong? But I think when we break down each of those four games, there's different things to complain about each of them. You know, Liverpool, we came off a great game against QPR. It was our first test of the season. I think it was perfectly reasonable for Pochettino to try out that same lineup and try and do the same thing and say, how good are we? Are we good enough at our best on my first choice team? Is this good enough to take down Liverpool? And it wasn't. And that was a learning experience, and that was fine. You know, we tried it again against Sunderland, and it showed, yeah, this team is good against bad teams. As playing. And so there's no reason not to keep doing that because it works. We had some bad breaks and it didn't work. West Brom, I mean, you're right. Partizan, it was weird. There's a bad pitch. It was a totally different team. We're away.
We hit the post in the first minute, didn't we?
I have no idea. I didn't watch it.
I think Harry Kane. Yeah, I think Harry Kane hit the post in the first. But yeah, that we didn't play well, regardless of whether or not we hit the post.
And so now we have West Brom, and West Brom, you know, even though it's the fourth in a string of four bad results, it's the only one that stands out as particularly worrying. And because of that, I think, you know, it's a mistake to extrapolate and say Pochettino's a problem, the players are a problem, the ownership's a problem, something's a problem. Like, it's possible that this was just a bad result.
But why do that? Why do that when you can get on Twitter and point at QPR or point at Southampton and, you know, do I told you so's with theoreticals that no one will be able to disprove? I mean, that's much more fun, right?
Oh, totally. I mean, I think that's what we're seeing, though, right now, is because there's no obvious common thread here, there's nothing that we can say, oh, yeah, this is the problem, fucking fix it. It's just, I don't know, things aren't going well, let me just lash out at whatever fucking comes to hand. And that's all kinds of crazy madness.
With
Tim Sherwood, you could look at his games and be like, yeah, this guy doesn't seem to understand the word tactics, and bad things are happening as a result. AVB is married to an ideology that has a lot of bad ideas. We can see that. With this, it's just like, I don't know, things just happen to be going wrong. And I think that's almost more worrying than when you can say, oh, this is why it's a problem. Well, if we fix that, it might get better. This is just, I don't know, things are wrong. The sky is falling.
Like, more worrying in terms of you should legitimately be worried, or more likely to
cause... more worrying to fans. Yeah, more likely to cause a panic is because there's no answer, you just reach for whatever you can grab a hold of.
Well, it's... So, like, you mentioned AVB, and I think... Well, I know I was very willing to write off a lot of those problems, be like, oh, we're still adjusting to, you know, Soldado or whatever. We're still adjusting to these guys. We were making a lot of excuses, but even at the time, you could see no movement up top. There's no creativity in the squad. I mean, you could point at the same thing over and over. And Michael, your projections, and I know I was one of the people giving you grief for it at first, but you were right. You caught on to AVB's probably a problem much earlier than the rest of us did, or at least those of us who weren't Ed, and Ed just sort of hated AVB because he's pretty. I mean, do you see any common threads in your stats, Michael?
Short answer, no. I mean, especially because I don't have Europa stats. So if you're looking at the league games, I mean, the numbers loved our performance against Sunderland. We had Sunderland actually as a better performance than against QPR, because against QPR in garbage time, we ended up giving up a bunch of chances. The numbers actually came out better in the Sunderland game. And so that plus West Ham, which was fine, our stats aren't good because we got completely stomped by Liverpool, but there isn't really any kind of pattern there to point to.
Okay, well, that's comforting on some level. I feel like...
But that said, I mean, I think, you know, there are problems. I mean, Pochettino has displayed problems, and this isn't to forgive him as a manager and say he's without fault and he's just unlucky, because there's things he's done wrong.
Yeah, like, that back line, I could understand it against... Sunderland, they're a bad team. You want to, you know, basically, you know, we almost did get away with it against Sunderland. The tying goal wasn't against our defense. It was against, yes, you're right. The defense was responsible on that one. Now that I'm thinking about it, Vlad let that one go past him, but we almost got past it with Sunderland. Hell, we almost got past it against West Brom, but still, like, Kabul and Vlad is like a heart attack waiting to happen. I don't know why Jan and Fazio weren't starting. Maybe it's because he wants them playing together every time and they're not bedded in yet. But I'll be very concerned if we're not seeing them play against Arsenal. And they might. But I'll be very concerned if they're not playing against Arsenal. Adebayor up top still doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I get that Soldado is probably hurt, and maybe Adebayor is just going to get senior starts over Kane. That's concerning to me. The midfield's still kind of in flux, and I understand the international break has a little bit to do with that. I mean, what do you think, Ben, the biggest lineup problem has been so far for us?
I mean, I think it's both the front and the back. It's, I mean, obviously the back line is a problem. you know, both defensively and, as Michael said, you know, we had almost 300 passes in our own half, which just speaks to an inability to get it forward, which, you know, obviously has to do with, you know, static movement from the players in front of them. But it also shows, you know, a lack of creativity and intelligence from the people with the ball at their feet. You know, and that's something that Vertonghen definitely brings to the side, that in addition to his excellent defending, he is very good at distributing the ball from the back in a way that Vlad and Kabul maybe aren't. Dyer as well, you know, he's given it a good go and he's popped up with some important goals, but he doesn't really seem to understand how to play as a right back. So he's not the most effective outlet out there. He doesn't really get the ball forward effectively from his position from the back. So that's a huge problem to start with. And then further forward, you know, we have Adebayor and Chadli who aren't, I mean, Adebayor, I think in the first 30 minutes had one complete pass and it was backwards.
Well, like Adebayor is like, I mean, you know, that dude has a first touch of a corpse. I mean, right. Watching those balls bounce off him, like you were playing keep you uppies against the wall, was just infuriating. I think Chadli, you can't, you know, I mean, maybe we'd like him to be better. Maybe we'd like someone better out there, but he's been decent for us so far this year.
But he hasn't. I mean, he has scored important goals, and I think that's very important. But when he's not doing that and when he's not getting in positions to do that, he's dead weight. I mean, he contributed less than nothing.
He's Jermaine Defoe on the left is what you're trying
to say. And you know, as we saw when Lennon came on, is having that third person in midfield who can actually contribute to the buildup frees up Eriksen and Lamela to be, you know, more effective in the final third. So I think Chadli and Adebayor have been a huge problem because if they're not getting into goal-scoring positions, they're not adding anything to the team.
I think Adebayor has been a much bigger problem. And, you know, and the thing about Adebayor is we don't know if that's on Pochettino or not, because I think this might have been the first game Soldado has been fit to start since the opening week or two.
But we also have Harry Kane. And, yeah, maybe it's too early to start a guy as young as Harry Kane. But when Adebayor has been as not good as he has, you know, sometimes you got to just try shit.
Yep. Michael, are there any lineup decisions that perplex you?
Well, I was thinking about this, and this is my concern about Nasser Chadli, is he's popped up in goal-scoring positions. He's finished a couple times. I mean, if a guy gets goals, a guy gets goals. But I'm trying to think of one time when he's made a run for a dangerous ball to be played into his feet. His finishes have been headers. They've been off crosses. I guess the first goal against QPR was played into feet, but it was a cross into feet. And he also got into position to play a rebound. But Eriksen and Lamela are guys who are going to be looking especially for runners, for through ball runs. And I'm not seeing Chadli give that to them exactly, which I'm not sure how well he fits as a scorer on the end of the kind of stuff that our best players are going to be creating.
That's fair. Yep. That's fair. I'm not sure he's been a disaster, but I think it's fair to say that we might be able to get someone better out there. I'm not sure who that is on our current team. Maybe just
I mean,
Kane
either Lennon or Harry Kane, I think, would. I mean, Harry Kane's off-the-ball movement is phenomenal.
It's great. He has no pace, though. That's what worries me about Kane. And if you're going to play him on a flank, I mean.
But now that it's Chadli.
Chadli has more pace than Harry Kane.
I mean, not Chadli enough. Chadley's not fast enough to be like, oh, he's a fast guy. That's an asset.
No,
I mean,
but
they're
he's
both
also
slow
average.
And they're both going to get beat by defenders. But what Kane does that Chadli doesn't is he makes those intelligent runs when the defender's attention is somewhere else and finds himself in a position where he can get on the end of a ball.
I suppose. I just think, I mean, I feel like Chadley's got more speed than Kane out there, but Kane's off-the-ball movement is so good, I'm not adverse to playing him out there. I just think it's, you know, I mean, you could see why we were trying to get all those left-wingers in the transfer window. Well, I think that's enough talk about West Brom, because that game was terrible. Do you guys have any in-game thoughts to add before we move on? I'm going to take those crickets as a yes. But we're not done talking about awful, awful things from that game. I want to take a minute to talk about our fans, the Tottenham fans, particularly the ones who showed up against West Brom. There were some comments from Alan Irvine after the game, the coach of West Brom, who said there was a change in mood in Spurs at the first half, where the crowd, he felt like the crowd was putting pressure on Spurs, and it gave the Baggies confidence, and because of the way the Spurs mood changed. I know I was talking to a few people on Twitter who I regularly correspond with who are at the game, and they were saying, one in particular, Milos Pearson, was saying at like the 22nd minute, someone turned to him and was like, I can't believe we haven't scored yet, which is like awful. I mean, come on, guys. Like, the camera caught some dude just utterly abusing Danny Rose when he gave the ball away. And yeah, it was stupid. And yeah, like, I mean, just a stream of invectives, completely unacceptable from any fan of Tottenham Hotspur. Because guess what, pal? Danny Rose might not be a great player. He's probably not going to be a starting left back for very long in the Premier League. But he's played double-digit games for Tottenham Hotspur. So even just doing that, he would have contributed more to this club than you ever did. But he also scored a golazo against Arsenal at home in a North London derby. Danny Rose has done more for this club than most fans.
He was very good. He was good against West Brom. He's been good all season.
He wasn't the problem.
I mean, he was arguably our best player against West
Brom. He's not the Danny Rose. Like, could we get a better left back than Danny Rose? Eh, maybe. But the point is, I don't care if Danny Rose is out there being like the worst player in the history of professional soccer. Like, he's wearing a Tottenham Hotspur shirt. You can groan about him. You can groan when he misplaces a pass. You can complain to your friends about him. Don't fucking yell a stream of invectives at him. He's a player for Tottenham Hotspur. He deserves your support. Lots of fans like to moan, oh, the club sees us as customers, not supporters. You want them to see you as supporters? Fucking support your team. This makes me so fucking mad. I mean, don't go to the games if you're going to fucking boo your own goddamn team. If the team goes out there, puts on Arsenal shirts, and like fucking pisses on Bill Nicholson's grave, then you can boo the team. Until then, either shut up or support your goddamn team.
Easy, killer.
It's fucking... Here's what makes me so angry about it. Yeah, we're Americans, and it's fucking hard for us to go see games. I would love to go to White Hart Lane every week. And there's lots of people in England who it's very hard for them to go to games, and they would love to go for the week. And these are a lot of people who would go there and not fucking boo their own team. And not get the West Brom manager to talk about how the crowd at White Hart Lane helped Spurs lose a game. Or draw, at the very least, but in this case, lose. We like to bag on Arsenal. I think Kevin wrote about this on Twitter or on the site. We like to bag about how bad the crowd at Arsenal is. How often do you hear this about an Arsenal crowd? They cost Arsenal a match. I don't hear that very often. All right, I'm sorry. Anyone want to take this? I've got to clean the phlegm off my microphone.
Well, you know, a lot of people who go to games, they say, we pay money, we deserve to be entertained. You're getting paid millions of dollars, so you have an obligation to entertain us. And that's not true. I mean, the players are getting paid a lot of money. They're there professionally. They should play better. But when you go to a game, you're kind of entering into a contract that the players are going to play well and you're going to support the team. That's kind of how it goes, right? You can't really do anything about how the players play. That's sort of beyond you. But you can do something about how you act in the stands. And if you're going to sit there and boo and be a shitty part of the atmosphere that, as Alan Irvine said, directly contributed to a bad performance from the team, you kind of lose all right to complain about the performance. When you're not upholding your end of the bargain, you know, it doesn't matter that they didn't uphold theirs.
There's a lot of, like, people talking, like, in Spurs fandom, and there's a lot of, like, I get, if you follow me on Twitter, if you follow me on the site, you know I complain a lot about Spurs fans. And a lot of what I get when I get a little worked up about it is people tell me, it's just Twitter, there's not... by which they mean it's like it's just the lunatics on Twitter. The larger Spurs fan base is not like that. Well, like, our fan base was a fucking toxic landfill on Sunday. It was, I mean, it was exactly like the attitude gets on Twitter. And we need to be better than that. We have a lot of fans talk about bringing the game back to the roots, supporting your club. And that was nowhere on display. And it's like, if you're going to talk about getting back to these things, and I don't want anyone to think I'm talking about 1882 here, because they, through getting fans to cup games, getting fans to Europa League games, getting fans to youth games, they've done a lot to improve the atmosphere around Spurs, or at least as far as I can tell from across the ocean. So I'm not talking about them, lest anyone think I am. But a lot of fans like to talk about bringing it back in the old days and it used to be better, and then they go to matches and shit like Sunday happens. Michael.
Yeah, I remember.
Oh, Ben.
Sorry.
No, Ben, please go.
I remember Hasim Ghali back in 2006, 2007 under Martin Yol. He got subbed off one game and was angry to be subbed off, and he threw his shirt on the ground. And this was an act, you know, born of frustration with his own play and with being substituted. But he threw the shirt on the ground, and Spurs fans saw that as disrespect to the shirt and disrespect to the club, and he basically got run out of the team. I don't know how that action is any worse than the disrespect showed by our own fans towards the people who are actually wearing that shirt and playing the games.
It's not. It's a guy like Danny Rose deserves your support. And if he's having a bad game, he deserves it even more. You should encourage him. Tim Sherwood had a quote last year at one point, because a bunch of fans were, again, getting on Danny Rose's back when I think he was actually not having a good game. And he turned around and yelled at some fans and was like, support him. Your job is to support him. Now, Tim Sherwood is a clown and wrong about almost everything. He wasn't wrong about this. Like if a player is having a bad game, he shouldn't have to worry about his own fans. If a team's having a bad game, they shouldn't have
to worry
about
their fans. Right, and the thing is, if the team is having a bad game, booing them has never helped.
Never.
That has never encouraged a better performance. Get behind the team, sing and chant and support them, and maybe the atmosphere and the idea of, you know, 30,000 people there to watch them kick ass will inspire them, you know, to do better. Positive reinforcement. Why is that so hard to muster?
Because, look,
I've never understood booing at games particularly. And what people always say is, oh, we wouldn't boo bad play. We boo lack of effort, lack of desire. And the problem with that is, one, exactly as Ben is saying, what does that help? And two, it ends up entirely in this stupid body language interpreter game the way you think a guy's face looks, the way you think a guy's arms are moving, show that instead of him having a bad game for whatever reason, maybe him being tired because he just had a baby, you are now blaming this on some defect of character that then enables you to claim that this person is somehow a weaker person and that you are going to boo them for failing to hold up their end of this bargain. And it ends – it's so easy to exploit that. You can say that about anything, anytime someone screws up, because a soccer game, it is so hard just to complete four passes when you can't use your arms. It's really hard. People screw up all the time. And so then you can always say, oh, he screwed up. He wasn't trying hard enough. And this creates – I think that there's something about that excuse that enables this whole toxic atmosphere. I think that talking about desire and effort all the time is a problem in itself.
It is, because we've built up this weird narrative that back in the day, people tried harder. They wanted it more. They cared more about the shirt. And maybe that's true, and maybe it's not. But my guess is things were always the way they are now. Maybe more players had an attachment to the club just because players moved around less. But, you know, it was probably always the same way. And if we're talking about desire, none of us know. You know who gets to criticize players for desire? Either the players themselves or Charles Xavier, because he's a fucking telepath and can read their goddamn minds. Unless you're a telepath, you really don't get to complain about lack of desire. Or unless they're like just like they sit down in the middle of the field while play is going on. Because, yeah, I think we can chalk that up to a lack of desire. Or they're hurt. So it just – infuriates me because – I know it frustrates me in particular because – I would love to have the opportunity, if not ability, to go to these games regularly, and I can't. And it's just like, I know if, you know, I'd rather, it doesn't have to be me, I'd rather just have people there who are not, like, giving the West Brom manager the ability to say this kind of crap. It's embarrassing.
I remember, I guess it was 2 years ago now, when it was Bradford City against Swansea in the cup final, and Bradford got shellacked 5-0. And their fans never stopped singing the entire match. Because, yeah, the team did not play well and weren't good enough to win and got their asses kicked. But it doesn't matter because they were just thrilled to see their team playing in this game. And they gave it their all. And they allowed themselves to just enjoy the fact that they were supporting a team playing a game of soccer. And I think that's something that we've really lost in the weight of all of this, you know, expectation and just entitlement, I guess, for what this team should be, that we've lost the ability to just, you know, be happy to be a community joined by love of this team.
Ben, that's
that's
a great point, and that's also a great segue. I was talking about how, you know, generally it's pointed out to me that what we see on Twitter is a small portion of the fan base, and how on Sunday it turned out that was our fan base. Let's talk about something that happened with, I don't even think I'm being charitable. I think it is a small portion of our fan base. Literally the best thing that happened on Sunday was Spurs Pride, an LGBT Spurs fan organization, had a flag up in one of the corners. I can't remember which one, but it was in one of the corners. And that is literally the best thing that happened in that match. And that is partially a tribute to the good work of Spurs Pride. That is also partially a tribute to how bad that match was, which is no reflection on the work of Spurs Pride. This organization is there to sort of just, you know, be a support group for, not support group, but like a fan group for, you know, LGBT Spurs fans, which is great. It is great because sports, I think in any country, it's not traditionally seen as the venue of LGBT individuals. And I think anything that makes these people feel like more part of the fan base is a good thing. And some knuckleheads on Twitter use this as an opportunity to complain about how Spurs were confiscating Israeli flags. So why are they allowed to fly this flag and isolate themselves from the rest of the fan base, but we're not allowed to wave this flag? Now, you know, should these people have had their flag taken away? Probably not. I'm not saying that's a good thing. And why the club did that, I think we can all guess. But not a good thing. But even if you think this is a terrible thing and a set of double standards the club had, maybe don't pick, you know, the LGBT community as your example to fight this battle on, because they don't always have it so great, and maybe don't make them feel like less of a part of the club. I mean, I don't know. It seems pretty fucking stupid to me. And that this was subject to anything but, hey, that's awesome, is ridiculous. And I'm rambling, so one of you, take it from here.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. This is a small portion of the fan base, a small portion of the internet fan base. The internet has a way of magnifying this sort of bigotry, but I think that I don't think it's particularly complicated. I think some people who have strong feelings about odd things about the team involving the ownership group, who also are, you know, bigoted, decided to connect these two things and start. I mean, the very first tweet that we saw go out on this used an anti-trans slur. So it's really not complicated. There's a bunch of bigots in the fan base. They're a small percentage of the fan base, but I think that we should just say that they're bigots and fuckheads, and yay for Spurs Pride.
Yeah, it should be noted they made a big point about how they're not bigots. They're just trying to make a point here about their, you know, why does the club have double standards? And it's like, congratulations, you sound like every American Republican politician trying to convince their constituents that they're not anti-gay. They just don't want special rules. That's in air quotes, because that's a podcast, not a video stream. Special rules for gay people, which is dumb as hell. And I'm guessing that they English people have probably heard the same from Tories. I don't know that.
Can we talk about men's rights while we're at it and have their big chat on?
Yeah, let's just bring every awful group of people from the internet into this conversation.
Speaking of awful people, let's move to the North London Derby, shall we? I think we've said what needs to be said.
Yeah, I think it's simple. It's fuck those people. It's great that there's a group for these fans. It's great. I just want to say, like, one of the things I like about being a soccer fan, being a part of Spurs fandom, is there's a lot of inclusiveness among the fan base. You know, I met a lot of friends, including these guys I'm podcasting with through it, in places I never would have met them else otherwise. It's a great inclusive thing, and anything that makes more people feel part of it. And I think these organizations, having a LGBT pride group for Spurs is exactly the same as having an Atlanta Spurs or a, you know, Southampton Spurs or whatever. It's the same thing. It's fine. It's great. And I think it's commendable that they're at matches flying this flag. Good on you guys. Keep
right.
Up the good
work. I mean, at the end of the day, the point is this is a group of people who felt less included in the fan community than they should, and were trying to make a place for themselves to feel included as part of Spurs fandom. So whatever your gripes about, whatever double standards there may be, any criticism of this is implicitly a criticism saying, I don't want some people to feel part of our fan base. And these are people who are, you know, bleed lily white, and to have any problem with that is frankly absurd.
Yes. So let's move on to the North London Derby. We have a match against Forest on Wednesday. I think we would all hope we will win. I have not watched enough Forest to really intelligently comment on that game. Do any of you have any very quick thoughts on Forest?
Well, Forest is currently kicking ass in the championship. It's Stuart Pearce's team, which is shocking because Stuart Pearce is a moron and a terrible manager. But somehow he has Nottingham Forest firing on all cylinders. Their striker, Britt Assombalanga, is scoring for fun right now. They're doing really well in the championship. And, you know, I guess we'll see how seriously they take this or how much they want to just focus on their promotion push. But if they decide to put out a first-choice lineup, they are a good team, and they're somebody we need to watch out for if, you know, winning this competition is something that we care about. They also have ex-Arsenal player Henri Lansbury dictating their midfield, so for that reason alone, we should want to dick them.
Just I again, haven't watched them. I don't have detailed statistics. It looks like they're only – it looks like they're averaging basically like – 6 or 7% more shots per game than shots allowed. So there may also be a little bit of a conversion rate flukiness going on in their hot start. But I don't know. I haven't actually watched them.
Well, here's hoping we beat them. Let's move on to not looking past anyone. I want to win cups this year. I think that should be a priority for this team. But let's look at the North London Derby. We go to the world's biggest center for texting, the Emirates, on Saturday to play the Scum. It'll be our first meeting of the year, Pochettino's first North London Derby. Well, it should be interesting. We are not coming off a nice stretch of games. Arsenal aren't looking dominant, but they had a very comfortable win against Villa this past week. About 5 minutes of domination and the rest of sort of comfortable, blasé, boring nothingness. I'm not feeling great going into this game. I think it's very bad timing. Ben, what do you think about our situation going into this match?
Yeah, timing-wise, it's really unfortunate because, I mean, let's be honest, a loss to Arsenal at the Emirates is a thing that will probably happen and most times would happen because they're a very good team, and when you play a very good team away from home, you tend to lose. And it's unfortunate because it's a huge rivalry game and, you know, the biggest game of the season to date. And it happens to come in a time when everybody is kind of ready to push the panic button because of previous results. So I just want to say that even if we lose, which, I mean, I hope we don't. I hope we fucking wreck the shit out of them. But even if we do, you know, please try and keep your knees from jerking and reading anything into some big picture here. Because 9 times out of 10, a team is going to go to the Emirates and lose. That's just the unfortunate reality of how soccer works.
If we beat Sunderland and West Brom, I think we would all have a much more realistic perspective going into this game.
Right. And so it's hard to maintain that kind of perspective because things have kind of been pretty rocky for almost a month now. So that said, Arsenal aren't in great shape. You know, their back line is a mess. They have only four senior defenders that are fit, one of whom, Callum Chambers, just had to play in their loss to Southampton today in the Cup. So, you know, that back line is going to be fragile, and it's there to be exploited. They are still terrible in midfield in terms of defense. They have no real defensive midfielder. So they're vulnerable to, you know, counterattacks very much, and we should be looking to exploit that. And I think if we play our cards right, you know, this is a winnable game.
Michael, what do you think we stand going into this match?
Yeah, I agree with Ben. I think this is a winnable game, but it would be a significant upset if we were to win this based on what we've seen so far. Arsenal have there are problems in that team, but most of the problems in Arsenal's team are problems that could arise, not problems that have arisen. I mean, we saw that their midfield couldn't handle Dortmund, but that's kind of another level. Their defense is thin, but they will be able to run out three of their four first-choice defenders, plus Chambers, who's at least cromulent at this point in his career. I have the game. My projections have it something like 50% Arsenal to win, 25%, 25% draw, or Tottenham win. So, you know, it's going to take something special for us to win. The one stat that I've got here is that Arsenal have allowed the highest percentage of fast attacks, that is, shots off attacks that move greater than five yards per second. Those are, you know, really fast-moving, boom, boom, boom kind of counterattacking shots.
Oh, God, we might start Townsend then, huh?
27% of the shots they've allowed have been over 5 yards per second, which is the highest in the Premier League. So I think that this is a game where one thing I think is really important in this game is that we set up not to play our usual pressing possession style. This is a game to set up to counterattack, use our strength in midfield, and attack Arsenal through the middle once they're not when they're not prepared, which is exactly when Arteta is at his weakest.
But at the same time, and I'm not disputing that, but just as a counterpoint, didn't Dortmund beat Arsenal? I'm not saying we're on Dortmund's level in any possible way, but didn't Dortmund beat Arsenal by pressing the hell out of them?
Yes.
So are we just not able to execute it to the level we would have to execute it to make that work, or is that really risky?
Well, I think the thing is that like there's pressing like Dortmund, which we can't do, and there's picking your times to press.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is a necessary part of a counterattacking style.
Fair enough. That makes a lot of sense. I want to talk a little bit about the mood going into this game, because like Ben said, we're coming off a fixture of, even if it's not as bad as it feels, what doesn't feel like a good run of games. I think maybe that we've all been sort of inoculated by the Sherwood and ABB eras, where a month of kind of icky results doesn't really phase us because we didn't look like total garbage during it. I just think you can see the sort of the hashtag brigade flirting on the edges of a meltdown. Today, everyone's like sucking Koeman's dick because they beat Arsenal at the Emirates, which, again, what's going to suck is if we lose, if we have a frustrating game, people are going to compare it to that game, not noting that Arsenal played like a bunch of backups and Sanchez. And Wilshire. I mean, it was a backup squad they beat today, which isn't saying that wasn't an impressive result, but it's also a backup squad.
Yeah, besides Chambers,
so it wasn't
line.
That impressive a result.
Well, I mean, you know, you go to the Emirates, you win in a cup game, especially for a team like Southampton, that's a result. They had Sanchez on the field, that's a result. It's just maybe not, it's not going to be the same as what we play on Saturday, is what I'm trying to say. And I just think people are going to try and make it like they're apples and apples and not apples and oranges. And it's going to be really, really frustrating. I don't know. I just feel
it's
like...
It's been a very meta podcast.
I feel like we're on the edge of a meltdown. And I don't think it's entirely a dessert. I really do feel like it's not as bad as it looks these days. And an Arsenal victory over us isn't going to help that any. And I'm really not looking forward to that, is what I'm trying to say. It would be really sweet to win. I think one thing we might have going for us is if the team just gets it one week, we could catch someone with their pants down if we just get what Pochettino is trying to do. If the team just finally clicks, like, I think that could be a really dangerous position for whatever team we're playing the week we click. Or when we, you know, when we click, whatever you want to say. So that could maybe work in our favor. I don't know. I think we're good enough to beat them. I think it's just, it's too early days for this team. We're not consistent enough. It's going to be tough. I really hate Arsenal, though. I really, really want to beat those dickheads.
So yeah. What kind of lineup do you guys want to see? I mean, do you want to run out the same thing that we've been running out?
With what Michael said, I think we're going to see something similar-ish. I think the midfield's going to look I think Adebayor will be in there because he's faster than Soldado. I wouldn't be shocked if we see a Lennon or a Townsend start just to add that speed into the lineup. I would imagine it would be Lennon before Townsend, but who knows? Ben, what do you think we're going to be bringing out there?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see Lennon and Soldado for Chadley and Adebayor. I don't know. I mean, obviously, a lot's going to depend on what we trot out against Forest tomorrow. Maybe if we had planned this better, we would have recorded it after the game.
Well, that could be a weird lineup too, because I mean, Pochettino might start to guys he might normally not have started just to kick the team in the ass. Because everyone was very unhappy with how that game went. Pochettino's comments were very not thrilled, and Kabul was echoing the same things. Apparently, Dembele led a post-match meeting. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if the lineup on Wednesday is maybe not ideal for the match on Saturday, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I hope we get Vertonghen in. I hope, you know, I think we're going to need someone like him in the back line. I don't know. I'm not opposed to starting like a Stambouli Kapu midfield if we're looking to play, you know, sit back and hit him on the counter. I don't think that's the worst decision, even if it seems a little negative. I don't know. I think Lennon shows up for North London derbies. I think has a pretty good track record in those games.
Remember that time he dribbled around Kenny Chesney?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Oh, that was great.
And the 4-4, he had a good game.
Oh, my God, that was awesome. Little Aaron Lennon, so bright and alive.
So, yeah, and I think, you know, his pace on the counter is going to be a real asset, and I really hope we see him out there. Other than that, I don't know.
Michael?
Anybody else?
Yeah, I mean... I mean, I want to see Vertonghen, and I want to see him paired with someone who isn't Kabul. I mean, if it's Dyer, if it's Vlad, if it's Fazio, I'm okay with that. I'm concerned about Kabul against the sort of speed and movement of that Arsenal front four. They are really good up top, and that's why I want to see more help. I want to see a defensive setup that is concerned about helping out against those guys, especially on the road. You know, Ozil at the number 10, Sanchez, Welbeck is perfectly fine. His movement's been good. There's a lot of defensive work to be done. That's also why a guy like Lennon is so helpful. It's not just his pace on the counterattack. He's also easily our best defender from the front.
Well, here's hoping we see an improved lineup. Hopefully the Forest match will be instructive, but I don't know. Those League Cup matches can always be weird. Do we hope we see Bentaleb out there or over Dembele? Or
I'd be fine. I mean, either way, I don't have a strong opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, again, it's like if we see Sunderland Dembele, great. If we see West Brom Dembele, yeah, I'd rather have Bentaleb.
Hopefully his wife doesn't have another kid a week later. That would be weird.
You never know. There could be twins in there and one is just taking a sweet time.
I don't know how Belgians work, so I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to profess cultural knowledge where none exists. So
yeah, don't presume here.
Exactly. Well, let's move on from – I feel like we're preparing to get hit in the face. So let's move on to another topic, which is actually getting hit in the face. It's listener questions. Let's start out with a good one from our dearly departed official cartilage-free captain vagabond Brett Rainbow. He asks, what will be this year's problem position, like left back was last year? The position we'll most regret not upgrading or reinforcing. Bonus question, who is the player we should have bought for that position? Ben?
I think it's I think left wing is probably the obvious answer here. Chally doesn't look like he's doing it. You know, Lennon has his limitations. Townsend seems to be playing a different sport than everybody else. So, yeah, somebody else to complement Lamella and Eriksson in midfield is probably the right answer. I don't know who that guy is. I mean, Depay probably would have been a good buy, and then he got injured. So, who knows?
Can you imagine the meltdown if we bought him and then he got injured?
It'd be horrible.
Yeah,
really, you know, hard. Griezmann was a good shout, but then Atletico Madrid came in for him, and we're never going to compete with the Spanish champions, probably. I don't know. I don't know how to say his name. Sadio Mane at Southampton looks like a solid acquisition for not that much money. If we were going to buy,
destroyed Hector Bellerin today, So.
Yeah, I mean, we could have sold them Townsend and bought him, and that would have been something. I don't know. I don't really, you know, the transfer window's closed. My mental processes for who those players were available has kind of shut down. But, yeah, that's my answer. I don't know if anybody else has a better suggestion.
I would say it's going to be right back because we have once again underestimated we seem to underestimate a recovery time for an important player. I'm not sure if you buy anyone for that because you have to assume Walker will be fine eventually. So if you get anyone, it's a backup option. And I'm just not sure if Spurs can afford to buy a super quality right back who's if he knows he's going to be behind Kyle Walker in the pecking order eventually.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we didn't buy anyone, and we didn't sell Naughton, and then we decided that we weren't going to use Naughton at all.
No, what happened is Naughton got his ass sent off, and then Dyer put two decent games together, and then for whatever reason, he's just rolling the dice with Dyer.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, if now, I mean, Dyer doesn't look like a right back. I mean, I like the kid. I think he's going to have a bright future with Spurs, but he's not a right back. And if Naughton was going to be so poorly regarded as to be easily replaced by an out-of-position center back, then we probably should have sold him and bought anybody else.
Yeah.
That's a weird decision.
Yep.
You know, or kept Yedlin even. I agree that, you know, he's probably not ready and not quite good enough to be in the Premier League, but...
Well, they took a gamble, like, oh, Yedlin will be our backup until he's either ready to start or we can sell him. And, you know, I think we just didn't count on Walker to be hurt as long as he is. And, you know, my guess is he probably won't be back till January now, but I'm not basing that on anything.
And that's hugely frustrating.
Yeah, it's really aggravating because I think, I mean, you saw, I who knows how we play with him, but under AVB, so much of our attack ran through Walker. And it's just so much more dangerous up and down the flank. And he's so much better defensively because he can recover so quickly. And God, who knows if Walker's going to come back at that same speed. So here's hoping. I would say right back, but I think left forward is a decent shout as well. Michael, do you have anyone?
I mean, I think you've hit the two basic positions.
Nailed it.
We brought in center backs, so we just need to play them. I mean, obviously, we should have re-signed Bale from Real Madrid if we cared about glory instead of profit.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Bale.
Daniel Levy. Yeah, for fuck's sake, Daniel Levy. For fuck's sake, Levy. He could have played left forward.
What about a striker?
You know, you can't just give up on Soldado and Adebayo. I mean, it's like, you got to see if there's anything there, and you don't want to block Kane. Like, this team had bigger needs than striker this offseason. I mean, it'd be nice if we could get someone in. We're never going to get Benteke. I mean, unless you have a crystal ball and you know who's going to blow up in 3 years, like, I don't think striker's where you put your resources if you're this club.
Oh, I guess the other answer is probably Morgan Schneiderlin. who is kicking ass at Southampton still.
Yeah, and that's another issue of, like, it was, are you willing to pay? It was like, it's like Musacchio. Musacchio is probably 16 to 17 million pounds is a fair price for him. And because of this weird third-party thing, we were going to have to pay probably closer to 30. And Spurs can't afford that for a center back. And then there's, you know, same with Schneiderlin. Because they've got fuck you Liverpool money, are we going to pay $30 million for Schneiderlin when we've got – he might be an upgrade, but is he a $30 million upgrade over Kapu
Yeah, I mean, it'd really be Bentaleb or Dembele.
Stambouli. I mean, it's like – you know, it's, there's just not. It just sucks. From Jelly Feast, dearly departed Jelly Feast, Sandro was already injured again. Does this make you feel at least a little less sad about his recent transfer to QPR? You know, I don't know if less sad is the word because I miss him and he was great, but at the same time, like, I think it might maybe bears out their logic of why they let him go and why he didn't end up at a club like Napoli.
Yeah, I think more than – it doesn't so much make me less sad as remind me why I'm sad in the first place. And it's that I'm sad to see Sandro go because he's kind of a mascot for the team and he was a great character. But it reminds me – oh, yeah, there's some real problems with Sandro and his ability to play football.
And we didn't just sell him because we hate fun. I mean,
right. Yeah. There was a need to sell him because he has, you know, problems and he's broken.
That's unfortunate. I feel like we haven't shared. In case you haven't heard, the reason he's hurt is because he scored a goal in training and slid and injured his knee. So that's a rough day for Sandro. Michael, does this make you feel less sad?
Yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, I'm sad that I remember when Sandro very, very recently was a fantastic footballer who, with another year or two at that level, everyone other than Spurs fans would have started realizing how excellent he was at what he did. And instead, he got injured, and he hasn't been the same since. And now it appears that that sort of injury cascade is happening, where he's just not going to be able to be anything close to the Sandro that he was. And that sucks. I mean, I'm glad, like, you know, business, we got money for him before everyone else saw that he wasn't good. But yeah, that's that happy.
I'd rather Sandro be good somewhere, at least. Like, even if it's not with us. Like, I'd like him to be good for us, but I'd like him to be good somewhere. But, you know, yeah, there's at least, I mean, there's some sense of at least we're not caught, at least we're not holding the bag. But, you know,
yeah,
Sandro's
it kind of makes me sadder.
I don't want him to fail. Like, as much as I'm glad that our club is intelligent, I'd rather just not see him fail. Let's move on to other things. From inverted fullback, what is wrong with our set piece? Both attacking and defending, with our set pieces, both attacking and defending, and what would you like to see done differently? Ben, you like to complain about set pieces. What's the deal?
I have no fucking clue. I mean, that is like some embedded in our DNA shit. Maybe we should switch to zonal marking? I have no idea.
Maybe if we brought Brendan Rodgers in. I mean, he taught Mario Balotelli. Oh!
Stephen Cocker. We need Stephen Cocker.
Fuck you. Fuck you.
How can you say that about the new Ludley King?
Stephen Cocker. He'd head balls into our net. Michael, do you have any thoughts on set-piece defending?
Yeah, I mean, we've conceded 15 shots off of corners this year from only 33 corners, which is, doing the math in my head,
I think technically that's called a lot.
Nearly three times the average rate. So to some degree, it's just, you know, that's going to regress. No one allows shots off corners that often. But that does suggest that we've been really, really bad at corners. And, I mean, I don't think that, like, there's some, like, double secret solution to defending corners. Everyone has to know where they're supposed to be in the zones that they're supposed to defend and the man who they're supposed to mark at the time when they come into that zone. It's a complex question, which is what managers are supposed to teach their players to be able to answer. I don't know why we're not doing it.
Oh, you know what? I do have an answer for offensive corners. We started the season, and we did in preseason, we did short corners, which I thought created a lot of better opportunities. I mean, corners are a very low percentage chance unless you're playing Tottenham. And now it seems like every corner we get, it's just whip it in near post to Eric Dier, which is both predictable and bad.
Well,
yep.
Here's hoping we get better at them because it's depressing. Carpet79 on the Twitter machine wants to know, how would Harry Redknapp, ABB, and Sherwood have beaten West Brom the other day, and why should they all manage Spurs at the same time? I think this is a fairly representative question of our fan base, and I would like to thank him for offering it to us. Michael, I'll start with you.
All right. Well, I mean, you got to think about how they would combine. And I think that definitely, you know, you'd have Tim Sherwood to handle the tactics so that we would play a 4-4-2 and play width and get them crosses in, even though we actually played the second most crosses of any team in the Premier League in a game this season.
It would make the announcers from last Sunday's game very happy.
Yep. And while we were doing that, I think that Harry could have been instructing the guys who were then going to receive those crosses to be running around. That way they could receive those crosses in the right place. And then once they scored, AVB could have celebrated.
I think that's a sound strategy.
That is perfect.
Ben, do you have any other thoughts?
No, that's the right answer.
Okay, so here's what I think would have happened. I think Tim Sherwood would have motivated the team to show guts and character. I think he would have gone out there and really gotten the lads to put one in the mixer and show some effort. And then I think Harry Redknapp would have, you know, dialed O-R-I-S-O-R. Shit, I ruined my joke. Harry Redknapp would have dialed up.
It was a really good joke.
Harry Redknapp would have dialed up his Monaco bank account and used that to pay for a rally car for AVB. And then AVB would have driven on the pitch and complained that Daniel Levy didn't have Lewis Hamilton pumping his gasoline, walked off in a strop, and that would have caused a distraction that would have let us score, and I think it would have been magical.
I just want to know what the media reaction would be to AVB, Harry, and Tim Sherwood all managing at the same time. I think
I'm
they would all
sure
spontaneously
would
combust, not knowing whether to shit on him or jerk off to every word he said.
It'd be so much media narrative catnip, they would just explode into a mist of cum. Just wafting away.
Well, we got our title for this week's podcast.
Yeah, there we go. iTunes will love us for that.
Yeah. Billy Dealer Radio, exploding mists of cum.
And on that note, I can't think of a better way to end it. For Wheeler Dealer Radio and Cartilage. Oh, yes. Do you have something to add there, Ben?
Well,
end up something else.
Brian asked a question that maybe isn't a great question, but it's probably on a lot of people's minds. Is it time – this is Brian Ashlock of Cartilage Free Captain Fame. Is it time to face the fact that we may have made the wrong hire this summer? Would DeBoer, Tuchel, or Schmidt be any better?
No, it is not time to face that. Maybe he is the wrong hire. I don't think, six games into the season is the time to give up on it. You know, it's not like we're watching Sherwood out there. I mean, you can see a plan, even if it's not always working. You can see a plan. In theory, it makes sense. I mean, we have to give the manager a little more time before we just point at Koeman being like, oh, he's had a good start to the season. Well, Alan Pardew finished fifth 1 year. How'd that work out? I mean, we've got to give it a little more time than a few games. And I don't think he was being serious. I think other people are, but I don't think Brian was being serious.
Roger Schmidt's Leverkusen are leading the Bundesliga in goals scored, and they have conceded the third most goals. They are hilarious. So that would have been a plus if we'd gotten in Schmidt.
Very, very, very Tottenham Hotspur, it sounds like.
Yep.
I do want to ask, sorry to kill your phenomenal ending. When Pochettino came to Southampton, he kind of had his team playing his way almost immediately. I mean, the turnaround of style, if not necessarily results, was pretty much instantaneous. Why does it seem like we're taking longer to get to grips with that than Southampton did?
A few theories. I think, for one thing, with Spurs, it's probably a little harder to do what he wants to do against other teams, if that makes sense, in that I don't think teams are coming out to play us as much as they came out to play Southampton. So I think they're packing in, they're more defensive, they're not opening themselves up quite as much. Maybe it's just an issue of, like, you know, you got the players at the level Southampton was at, and they're just going to adapt to a system quicker than when you've got players, I don't know, of a higher caliber. I don't have a great explanation for this. I'm just throwing out some what strikes me immediately. I mean, what do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Michael? I asked the question because I have no idea.
Oh, well, that's comforting.
Yep.
Michael,
you're welcome.
We can't hear you. Oh, we lost Michael.
Well, on that note.
On that note.
This is food for thought. Leave your comments in the comments.
Or don't. Or don't. For Michael, our dearly departed Michael, for Ben, I am Skipjack. Thank you for joining us for another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Podcast. Come on, you Spurs.